Maine's political policies made possible by listeners and by Lee Auto Malls, family-owned and operated since 1936, with locations from Bangor to Saco. Learn more at leeauto.com.
And welcome back to Maine's Political Pulse. I'm Erwin Gratz, along with Maine Public's Chief Political Correspondent Steve Missler and Senior Political Correspondent Mal Leary. Gentlemen, we have two major stories we're going to talk about, one of which was completely predictable and the other one was not. Of course, the latter I'm referring to is the attack this week on the U.S. Capitol. Mal?
This was just astonishing. And as someone who has been in the Capitol and been working there years ago, the thought that the security was so lax was the other thing that just amazed me. You know, I'm looking at a handful of police officers on the screen trying to handle a crowd of thousands. I mean, that just made no sense.
Steve?
You know, Mal and I were both here at the State House Bureau in Augusta, and our doors are pretty close to one another. And I kept popping into Mal's office and just saying, "Are you seeing this? This is incredible." And I think Mal's primary reaction was just shaking his head because it was that disturbing. Mal's point about the police not being able to hold back these people or not having enough people to do so was just a great mystery that I think is trying to be solved right now. But the Capitol was breached for the first time since the War of 1812, when the British burned the place to the ground. That was actually in 1814, but it was part of the War of 1812, according to the Capitol historian. And, you know, what we saw inside the Capitol were Trump extremists basically carrying around all sorts of flags, the Confederate battle flag, Trump flags, and it was quite a sight. And, you know, a lot of these folks were conspiracy theorists or they were right-wing militia groups. The match was lit by the president, and these folks marched down Pennsylvania Avenue just as he had asked them to. He didn't, you know, explicitly ask them to go into the Capitol building, but that's exactly what they did, because if you saw some of the videos of the supporters after they were made to evacuate and leave, a lot of these folks actually thought that they were going to reverse the presidential election. They thought they were going to be able to go there and pressure Congress to undo a fair and free election.
Yeah. Talking with members of the delegation, hearing words like mob and riot and insurrection in the context of our Capitol building was shocking to all of them. And those were the words they were using to describe what they saw. The fact they had to run for cover was just astonishing. And I think that it's something that's going to have an impact on many lawmakers on both sides of the aisle.
Yeah, well, you had a chance to talk, I know, it had some length to Susan Collins about this. She actually gave a very vivid description of what was going on as this began for her.
All of a sudden, police officers and others from the sergeant at arms office ran into the chamber and removed the vice president who was presiding, went up to the majority leader and took him away, and the Democratic leader removed him.
I can imagine, too, that's going to weigh heavily on her thinking, especially now that she's going to be part of a Congress that's going to be kind of nominally under Democratic control.
She was absolutely shocked by what happened. I can tell you that. Members of the Senate were being pushed by police and guards and Secret Service to get them to that safe location. So when that sort of thing happens, it has a huge impact.
In the House chamber, it was a little bit different because people couldn't get out of there. Representative Shelley Pingree said, too, that, you know, the other issue that happened here was, you know, when these people came in, they were obviously blowing past what is typically a rigorous screening process to enter the Capitol to begin with. There was a lot of concern about whether these folks had weapons. You know, there were pipe bombs that were, you know, had to be detonated at the Republican National Committee. A person was killed in the Capitol building. And we've since learned that there have been other deaths inside and outside of the Capitol, either from injuries during the scuffle or from medical emergencies where people had, you know, heart attacks.
And not every door in the Capitol is set up for security screening because they don't normally use them all for entry and exit. And some of those doors were also breached. So there was no opportunity for anybody to screen anything for a weapon. I guess the next issue that this raises is the question of what happens over these next 12 days. There's been a lot of talk about the 25th Amendment or the Congress impeaching the president now. Neither of these seem to be very likely, but Mal, it has not stopped at least two members of our delegation from supporting the idea that Trump needs to go now.
I would agree with you. I don't think that the vice president will start the process and get a majority of the cabinet to immediately remove the president from office. Impeachment's another matter. Impeachment's a simple majority vote in the House of Representatives. The Democrats control it. And there are Republicans who are now saying they will vote to impeach him over this. It's symbolic because it will never have enough time to get to the Senate for a trial. And it takes a Senate vote to actually remove the president from office. But I think this goes to my point about the anger that so many lawmakers are feeling. They want to do something to show that they are really upset, displeased, angry, whatever word you want to use, with President Trump and his inciting of that riot.
You know, the president is taking a lot of the blame for inciting this thing, and he deserves every bit of it, frankly. On the other hand, there's also call for reprisals or sanctioning or censuring of some of the Republican lawmakers, including in the Senate, that were going along with subjection to the election results, talking about specifically Senators Josh Hawley and Ted Cruz, who were clearly doing this, you know, to further their own political ambitions. There's a lot of people who are blaming them for basically entertaining the president's whims for their own particular political ambitions. And I think, you know, I don't know what, if anything will happen to those folks, but perhaps their political futures will be dimmed somewhat for, you know, participating in this and arguably facilitating what happened there. The biggest problem with those particular lawmakers is that, you know, they were saying things like, well, our constituents are angry and they're upset and they're mad because they think there was voter fraud. Well, the problem with that argument, and this is true here in Maine too, with some of our elected officials or people upstanding in the Republican Party, is that they were feeding those concerns among the Trump supporters. They were telling them that there was fraud, or they were floating the idea that there was a possibility of fraud. Their job is to tell their constituents the truth. I mean, that was basically what Senator Mitt Romney said during his floor speech. If people are confused or don't know what's going on or know the truth, it's the elected official's job to tell them. That, in many cases, did not happen.
You know, there's a lot of talk about the votes that Donald Trump got in the last election, but I think there's always been some suspicion that not all of those people were really wedded to Trump and all of his ideas. So the question really becomes, how large is the group of people who are truly confused about what's going on or suspicious of the last election? And I guess in the ensuing weeks, we'll probably get some sense of that.
Just watching some of the fallout here in Maine among conservatives, that there are certainly conservatives or people who are in the Maine Republican Party who are just horrified by what they saw. But at the same time, as you look at social media postings, when those people speak out, they are immediately shouted down by people who still believe that there was widespread fraud in this election. And they also are beginning to believe more conspiracy theories that the people who stormed the Capitol were not Trump extremists, but Antifa. That is what I'm hearing over and over again. It was said, or, you know, it was floated as a possibility by the assistant Republican leader in the Maine legislature. There's this slow effort, if you will, to sort of muddy the waters and to float the idea that there somehow were these folks were, you know, infiltrated by leftist groups or something.
By the way, we shouldn't end the discussion without a few words about Nick Isgro, the former mayor of Waterville, who has also remained pretty strident in his support for the claim that the election was fraudulent and there was something amiss in the whole system.
He appeared on a conservative radio station basically saying that Trump should never leave. He shouldn't leave office. And he is the vice chairman of the Maine Republican Party. You know, Nick Isgro may seem like a fringe figure in the party, but there are a lot of adherents to some of the things that he says. And I think the Maine Republican Party has to make a decision about how it's going to deal with that.
All right. Well, I'm sure we'll be returning to something about this subject in the weeks ahead. But let's turn our attention to the other significant political event that was predictable and that normally would be a much greater focus of our chat today, which is Governor Mills has unveiled her budget documents, a supplemental budget to kind of carry the state through the rest of this fiscal year, and then a new blueprint for the 2 years that begins July 1st. Mal, you want to start us?
This budget, as she put it, has no new taxes in it. It tries to provide the same level of services with a few tweaks. There is a 0.75% increase overall in state spending, which is sustained by the revenues that have been projected right now. One of the problems with all of this is both the revenue forecasting and the economic forecasting group, who gave the numbers that were used to put this budget together, were very clear that they're not sure what's going to happen. So much of our economic rebound for revenues was because of the CARES Act and literally billions of dollars in federal money coming into the state, both to the state and directly to hospitals, to businesses through the Paycheck Protection Program. And that's the impact was starting to slow. In fact, we saw the national numbers come out for the first time in 6 months or 7 months. There was a loss of jobs nationally of 140,000. There had been slowly coming back growth every month. That has now reversed. If the federal government doesn't provide continued stimulus for a while, the state's in trouble. To me, it's a placeholder budget because they've done what they could do with what they know. But the reality is, more so than any other budget year I can remember, we just don't know what's going to happen to the economy and to revenues.
Yeah. When we talk about the likely additional help from the federal government, Steve, it seems like that is more likely now because Democrats have secured control of the Senate.
You know, those runoff victories by the Senate Democrats in Georgia certainly improve the prospect, I think, of more robust federal aid coming to the state of Maine and, of course, the other states as well. There may be some question over, you know, direct payments to Mainers and that sort of thing, which would also be a huge boon to the economy, because hopefully that money would be, you know, spent by its recipients, and that would help, you know, get revenues moving along. I mean, that's essentially one of the reasons why Maine's economic recovery is a little bit better than, you know, some had anticipated, is that, you know, there were those direct payments early on after Congress approved them. You know, all the other programs that Mal just outlined, those are huge in helping the state sort of, you know, ride this out a little bit. We don't know what's going to happen, you know, and so much of it depends on the pandemic and its trajectory. And right now, the trajectory is not good. The cases are through the roof. The deaths are increasing. People are tired of the pandemic restrictions, and we're all stuck inside. Hopefully, those things will all change. You know, if the pandemic can be abated a little bit, if the federal government can help, suddenly Janet Mills might be looking at being able to change the budget in a way that she can put money towards some of her policy initiatives. That's really not in here. This is not, as she said, a political document. It's really a no-nonsense document, in her words. Right now, it's holding the line.
And by the way, just to remind folks of the way things work, assuming there is no budget approved by April 1st, then there will need to be a two-thirds vote in order to get a budget in place on time for next July 1st.
That's right, and that makes the Republican votes all that more important.
That's Maine's Political Pulse for this week. A reminder, the Pulse podcast is updated every Friday, and you can download it from mainepublic.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Most of the Political Pulse can be heard on Weekend Edition Sunday, with excerpts on Maine Public Radio's Morning Edition program on Mondays. Steve Missler produces the Maine Political Pulse newsletter, which you can download from mainepublic.org and subscribe to have it deposited in your email inbox. He usually updates that on Friday morning. Willis Ryder Arnold is our producer. Music is by Rob Holt. I'm Erwin Gratz. We'll be back with you soon.